So the Dodgers pounded out 20 hits, 11 runs, and they put the beat down on the Washington Nationals. Dodgers got it started real quick. They scored one in the first inning, one in the second inning, so it's great to see them score in all three innings to start the game out with. First inning, they scored one. Second inning, they put a crooked number up with two. Third inning, they scored one. And so great to see how that is spread out. As a matter of fact, the Dodgers scored in six different innings tonight. So when you're scoring in two-thirds of the innings that you play offense in, it's going to be a good night. And it certainly was for the offense. Again, 20 hits and 11 runs. Mookie Betts had four hits on the evening. He's moved his average all the way up to 365 on the year, 1093. Shohei Ohtani, he had three hits. So between your top four hitters tonight, you went 12 for 23. Anytime you're hitting over 500 in the top of your lineup, first four spots, that's almost half your lineup. It's going to be a good night. Then at the bottom of your lineup, how about the rookie Andy Páez? He had three hits tonight. So your 8 and 9 holes tonight went 5 for 10. So when you're talking about six spots in your lineup, top four, 12 for 23, then 5 for 10, that is 17 for 33. You went over 500 in those six positions. And then Max Muncy also had a couple of hits, and Tio Hernandez had a hit as well. James Altman is the only one that wore the collar tonight. He went 0 for 5. But all around, it was an explosive evening. Hey, what I like about it was, it wasn't like you just scored like 9 runs in one inning and they didn't score for the rest of the 7. I mean, you're talking about scoring. Two different times you scored 1 run. 3 different times you scored 2 runs. And then one time in the 9th inning, you scored 3. So, hey, they were sitting on the fastball. They were sitting, they were laying off everything else. Every hit except for Tio Hernandez, who actually hit a curveball. He was the first one to get a hit on something that wasn't a fastball. And then Gavin Lux actually hit a cutter. But the rest of them early on in the game were all off of fastballs. Freddie Freeman went 1 for 5 on the evening. Will Smith, how about him? 352 on the season, 864 OPS. He's getting great pitches to hit. So when you look at him, you got Freddie Freeman in front of you. Max Muncy, a great run producer behind you, who had two hits tonight and was on base 4 times. That's Max Muncy right there. Freddie Freeman only went 1 for 5, but he was on base 3 times as well. Shohei Ohtani was on base 4 times. So from an offensive perspective, it was just absolutely an explosion. I talked on yesterday's show that, hey, that game, the first game against the Nats, certainly wasn't an explosion, but it was a fun game to watch from an offensive perspective because you got some things going and you capitalized. But yes, no doubt about it, tonight being Wednesday night, and whenever you're watching this, that absolutely was an offensive explosion. Shohei Ohtani had 3 doubles. He now has 14 doubles on the season. Andy Páez also hit his second home run of the season, and boy, wasn't that fun to watch for him. Mookie Betts had a couple RBIs. Gavin Lux at the bottom lineup also knocked in a couple of runs. Hey, how would you think about the rook, Landon Knack? I thought he did a good job keeping his composure. The fastball got hit around a little bit early on, and when you had the inning where you saw him walk a couple guys, of course, we always talk about the key to Landon Knack is that he is a professional 4-pitch strike thrower. He's going to locate, he's going to throw the ball in the zone, and he's going to be very good at commanding the ball with good pitches inside the strike zone. He did have the 3 walks, and they were all back-to-back, and to me, just my opinion, he had had his fastball hit around a little bit early in the game. It spooked him a little bit. So if you look at the sequencing after that, after a couple of those hits that led to the walks, he was trying to get away from his fastball, trying to throw his curveball, trying to throw his changeup a little bit more, throw his slider. And then the Nats were laying off of that. And they laid off of that and drew some walks. Eventually, what I really liked about Landon Knack, though, he continued to sequence. And because he continued to sequence, eventually his fastball got better at not getting hit. So I think there was a lot of teaching points to come away with from Landon Knack tonight. And again, if you can get, I say it all the time, no matter what, the Dodgers should be able to score. They scored 11 runs tonight, right? I said it even last year. If you give up even 4 runs, which isn't a good ERA by any stretch, but if the Dodgers starting pitchers go at least 6 innings, even if they give up 4 runs, which Landon Knack tonight only gave up two earned runs, which is half of that. You'll take it, because with the way that the bullpen is operating right now, with the volatility of injury and all that, the innings are, to me, are more important than the runs given up, because the offense, by and large, on a night-to-night basis, is so good. So Landon Knack had a good night tonight. Ryan Brazier, he came in and threw a scoreless inning. And then Ryan Yarbrough, we talk about him and Michael Grove, how valuable those guys are to be able to extend multiple innings. Because again, last night you used Evan Phillips. Last night you used Daniel Hudson. Tonight you used Ryan Brazier. And so, you know, you've got to have a guy. Last night you had, with James Paxton only going 4 2/3 innings on Tuesday night, then what that means is somebody, of course, last night you had to use an extra reliever, and because last night you used an extra reliever, you didn't want to use 4 or 5 relievers again tonight, so somebody needed to extend multiple innings. Guess who that somebody was? That was Ryan Yarbrough. So the biggest part of that was Landon Knack went your 6 innings, Ryan Yarbrough extended the 2 innings, which meant you only needed to cover 1 inning with one other guy, and that would be Ryan Brazier, which is no problem for him. He threw a good scoreless inning, had a strikeout. So Landon Knack had 5 strikeouts on the evening and 3 walks, gave up 2 earned runs, gave up 3 hits. Obviously, the 4-seam fastball is what he threw the most, and he got in-zone swings with that 71% of the time. And we always talk about it. He's a great strike thrower. 65% of the time, he threw his 4-seam. It was for a strike. Sometimes that's too much. I mean, especially to major leaguers, if they know the fastball's coming, they're going to hit it. The second pitch he threw the most was his slider. His slider was in zone just 39% of the time. So usually he's a little bit higher than that. So I will say this. Hey, Landon Knack, great job. 6 innings, 2 runs. You'll take that every day. Twice on Sundays, I still think there is a better version of Landon Knack out there at the major league level, and how exciting is that? Then he threw his curveball 10 different times and his changeup 10 times as well. So between his curveball and his changeup, he split the difference between those two in 20 pitches, but very heavy slider, fastball tonight to the Nats. And by and large, when you throw it all in the oven and you let it bake, a good job for Landon Knack. So, hey, it was a great outing tonight. The Dodgers still did leave 11 men on base, but that's because they had so many men on base. They actually went 7-for-15 with runners in scoring position. If you go back about the last week, the Dodgers actually have been pretty good with runners in scoring position, although sometimes it doesn't seem like it. The Dodgers had some more 2-out RBIs tonight too, which, hey, they are one of the best teams, they have been in the last couple of years, of getting RBIs with 2 outs. So it was all good. I mean, there's not really a whole lot to analyze other than the fact that the Dodgers were due for an offensive explosion. They had it. 6 different guys had multi-hit games. Mookie Betts had a 4-hit game. Otani had a 3-hit game. You had 2 different guys that had 4-hit games, Mookie Betts and Will Smith, and that gave a lot of courage. When you score runs like that, that gives courage to your starting pitcher, especially when he's a rookie. Landon Knack, who did very well to go 6 innings, and it was a good night overall. So Austin's getting ready to join. We have a very, very good Down on the Farm show. Going to talk about Jackson Ferris. Going to talk about Walker Buehler's rehab. Going to talk about all sorts of fun stuff down the farm. Ben Kasparius, Jose Ramos, you name it, Chris Newell. Hey, Ronan Kopp made his way back, made his debut. We're getting ready to talk about all that. So stay tuned. Let's not take any more time. Let's not waste any more time. Let's take a trip down on the farm. Austin, welcome back into the Down on the Farm segment here on Dodgers Daily. I know you've been very busy visiting family as of late. You have a very busy weekend coming up. I know you're getting ready to travel for some great Loons baseball. So first of all, tell us what you have in store coming up this weekend.
Yeah, I've got some really exciting things coming up this weekend. So Loons are playing in Fort Wayne, Indiana, and that is only a couple of hours away from my house. So Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. So technically, when this video is released today, I'll be headed out to Fort Wayne to watch the Loons compete in action. And then next week, I'll be getting on a plane as part of my Christmas present to go to Appleton, Wisconsin to watch them play a couple of games midweek. So it'll be over the course of the next week or so, I'll be watching 6 Loons games, getting back into the action and watching some more great, some more of these great Dodgers prospects that we have in this system. And there is a lot of these guys to talk about, a lot of exciting action, so much to be excited about if you're a Dodgers fan about the future of this organization.
No doubt about it. Let's start in the single A level. We've already talked about him a lot. Why I wanted to bring up Jake Geloff again, you're seeing him on the screen here, is for the simple fact that we've talked so much about how he was so good about staying inside the ball, using that right center field gap, using the opposite field gap. I compared him to Austin Gauthier. I said, you know, hey, imagine Austin Gauthier with massive power like Jake Geloff has. That's what you have with this guy. What Jake Geloff did tonight, though, is he reminded us that, yes, he can turn on a ball, and when he turns on a ball, it goes a long ways. Jake Geloff, very impressive. I know you're smiling from ear to ear, Austin, because you're thinking you might get him pretty soon, right?
Oh, with the way that he's swinging, with the numbers that he is putting up, he's hitting 351, 473, 596 as far as his average on base percentage in slugging. And you just saw that with that hit that he has. He has massive
like that bat flip
power.
That was sweet.
Oh yeah, and with the ability to hit it to especially that right center field gap pretty consistently reminds you of a player like Gator, who was able to do that and still is able to do that. That's going to drive in a lot of hits. That's also going to force pitchers to throw it inside or try to find ways to attack you as a hitter, which is going to open up opportunities, especially with the power that Jake Geloff has, to be able to pull that, to be able to just launch into it. And Jake Geloff has a ton of power. And right now, he is swinging the bat extremely well, helping lead this Rancho Cucamonga Quakes offense.
No doubt about that. We've covered him quite a bit, so we're going to go ahead and move on to another guy that I think that you need to hear about. He had a really, really good outing today. That is Gabe Emmett. Gabe Emmett, quietly, you're going to get to see him, Austin, very, very quietly. He's been one of the better pitching prospects, at least from time to time, in the organization. Now, it's quietly because he's been at Rancho, it seems now, for like 5 years now. But he has a lot of uniqueness, as you see here. What I want you to know is a lot of east and west. Now, that's a good slider there that has some depth. But he has a lot. See that east and west right there? That right to left? He has a lot more. That right there. Do you see that frisbee? A lot more sideways movement to him. He can get some depth from time to time on that changeup. But Gabe Emmett, he relies on movement. He relies on location, specifically east and west type of movement. When I talked to pitching coach of the Rancho Cucamonga Quakes, Sean Coyne, he went on and on and on about how good this guy is. So Gabe Emmett, he had a good debut a couple of days ago, a good outing tonight.
Yeah, and the results are starting to show for Gabe Emmett, who, as you mentioned, a little bit more east and west. But even with that, you don't just get swings and misses north and south. You can also get swings and misses, as he did right there, east and west, with different approaches that you can have for hitters. Gabe Emmett is starting to put a lot of these pieces together. He's having some really good outings. He's able to get swings and misses, as you can see, against left-handed hitters. Gabe Emmett's going to move fairly quickly up to Great Lakes and continue this great wave of prospects that are going to be coming up to the Great Lakes Loons organization from Rancho.
I really do think that Jake Geloff is going to be coming up here pretty soon, and then also Gabe Emmett. Hey, so let's move on to the high A Great Lakes level, the level that you're going to get to see all weekend. Let's go back to Jermaine Rosario. This will be the second time that we have talked about him this year. Austin, I know you've seen him in person a couple of times. By the way, got to see Sauer Lau in person the other day. Look at that big curveball from Jermaine Rosario. I know you warned me, man. Hey, this dude's really good in person. I was just blown away about how good he is. But Jermaine Rosario, you mentioned him a couple of times. You've seen him in person. Look at that slider. You saw him shape the curveball on basically a straight 12-6, and he really lights up the top of that zone right there with that four seam. He's kind of like Sauer Lau in the sense that it just seems like his ball explodes. So Jermaine Rosario, it really seems like the execution is starting to come together for him. We've always known the stuff was there, but it just seems like he's executing better now.
Yes, the execution is absolutely there, and his confidence is, he has the most confidence that I've seen out of Jermaine Rosario. He was on the Great Lakes Loons team for a large portion of last season, and there were some good outings. There were some outings wherein you saw what you see in 2024 for Jermaine Rosario, where he was dominant, where he was extremely effective. And then there was outings where he would give up a couple of barrels and get hit up a little bit. Now he's pitching with more confidence, and you can see with the stuff, with that fastball, with the slider combination, the breaking balls that he has, he's becoming a complete pitcher, and he's gaining a ton of confidence with everything that he is throwing, and he is extremely dominant and extremely effective right now. And this is kind of goes back to some of the results that he had, even looking at some of his expected numbers, the FIP and expected FIP from last year indicated that there is even more out of Jermaine Rosario. That is proving to be right this year, and he is absolutely going out there and shoving right now.
Huge breaking balls and different shapes.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, he has a 12-6 shape that's really depthy. He has a 12-6 shape that's a little shorter. He has more of a kind of a left-right or right-left type slider. He has top-of-the-zone carry. He has bottom-of-the-zone carry. Love Jermaine Rosario. Let's move back to the offensive side. Look at that bomb. Chris Newell, baby. I love this guy. He has an absolutely picture-perfect swing. Head doesn't move. There's no wasted movement. He was on a good track last year out of the University of Virginia. Actually, teammates with Jake Geloff and Brandon Neek, who are both in the organization. I know you've seen Brandon Neek to this point. He is very good, a left-handed relief pitcher. Mm-hmm. Chris Newell, you and I have both kind of stated that either he, maybe a Damon Key type of guy, might be the next James Outman type of guy. He has that kind of ability. When Chris Newell stays healthy, which he wasn't able to do towards the back half of last year, that's really the only thing that gets in his way, because he has every single tool. The guy is an elite base stealer. He stole over 40 bases his senior year. Matter of fact, I think he led the nation in stolen bases at the University of Virginia. So he's a big-time base stealer. He plays center field. He is very, very fast. Worlds of power. Good arm. He has the ability to hit for average. You can see with that sweet swing there. If everything's going good and he's healthy, nothing not to like about Chris Newell.
The tools are absolutely there for Chris Newell. As you mentioned, he's got some speed. He's got some very serious pop tonight during the games, the doubleheader that the Loons have, which it seems like Chris Newell plays his best when the Loons are having a doubleheader, because when there's a doubleheader in Lansing, he went out and absolutely performed and shoved. He's doing that again against the Tin Caps in games one and two of the doubleheader. He had the home run with an absolute bomb to right field, and then he had an opposite field home run to left field as well. Chris Newell, if he's able to continue to make consistent contact, there's nothing that's going to be able to stop Chris Newell. He's got the tools. He can play center field. He can play left field, right field. He can play anywhere in the outfield. He's got good speed. He's got a lot of power and a lot of hit tools. It's about making sure that he's able to make that consistent contact. That's going to be the next step to elevating Chris Newell into the conversation of being a just top line Dodgers prospect and a guy who could turn into the next James Outman.
Also, another comp you could say, maybe, and this is, you're seeing Nick Bittison here, maybe a left-handed version of Jose Ramos, right? Lots of power, absolute great athletic ability, can hit the ball to the moon, just has to put the ball in play more. Hey, I know you love this young man out of Virginia Tech. Really short, really compact swing, been very hot lately. And by the way, he was just a home run shy of the cycle in the first game of the doubleheader today. He actually came up one last time trying to hit a home run. He popped up and he threw the bat away, pissed off about it. And because I mean, he had a chance to hit the cycle, right? And it wasn't like he needed a triple, but I know Nick Bittison, you are very, very high on him.
Oh, don't let Biddy get hot, because Biddy just adds insane amount of depth to this lineup. And he's got a lot of those tools in there, as you mentioned. And you can see him hustling to third right there on that triple that he had, which he was just a home run away from the cycle. Biddy has a lot of those tools. He's versatile. He can play. He's played a lot of first base, but he's also played third base. He can play the outfield. I remember in game one against Cedar Rapids in the Midwest League Championship last year, he had a great jumping catch in right field. He's had some incredible performances, and the offense being able to find that hit tool has been a little bit of struggle going into this season. Now Biddy is starting to get hot, and he's starting to feel it. And watch out, because if you're an opposing team, you don't want Biddy to get hot, because he has some pop in his bat. He has a little bit of wheels. He can hit those doubles, and he can also, even though he didn't hit the home run tonight, can still hit home runs as well. Nick Bittison, short, compact swing, versatile, really good player, a guy that you want on your team.
Come on, Biddy. You got to get that home run, that last at bat. You got to have the dramatics, man. You got to step up when it counts, right? Got to get that cycle. Hey, well, this is the second time we've talked about Chris Campos. I kid, of course. And Nick Bittison is way better than I could have ever dreamed to be. So, yeah, definitely just kidding there. Hey, Chris Campos out of St. Mary's College, originally modern day, actually transferred out of high school, finished at, I can't remember the exact high school he finished at, but finished very motivated to become a Division I player because he was always told he was too small, around 160, 170 pounds. Played shortstop in college very well. He is a plus athlete. Him and Ben Kasparius and Peyton Martin, all shortstops in high school, and then at the college level, they all went out in the outfield one day, and Jared Karros actually was the announcer for it, and they all went out there and had a competition of ground balls to see who is the best at the ground balls. I need to check back in with Peyton, because he said there's still round two and round three to come to see who actually wins that ground ball competition, but Chris Campos is in the middle of that.
Yeah, and he is starting to really perform. Started the year, I believe, on the development list, but came in, and his past couple of performances, and especially the performance against Fort Wayne, as you are seeing right here, started to get a lot of swings and misses, and it's just been extremely effective during the early parts of this Midwest League campaign and his 2024 season. He's done a lot of things right. You can see the pitching ability that he has. He is a really good, really talented bulk inning type pitcher. He can start a game. I know he started a lot in years past, has come out in kind of that bulk piggyback type starter appearance so far. Chris Campos is definitely a guy to watch, because right now he's feeling it.
He absolutely is. Let's move on up to the Double A Tulsa level. Ben Kasparius, he did give up a couple of home runs today. Not going to sugarcoat that. So, hey, the numbers, it's kind of like periods of last year, and I know I keep saying this about Ben Kasparius. He hit 97, though, and the fastball is by far not the crown jewel of his mix. The crown jewel is that right there. He has just a myriad of different breaking balls that are just absolutely wicked. Still trying to find the feel of those. I have communicated with Ben Kasparius today. He says everything is feeling better than it ever has, feeling good, everything going good. Can't wait to get out and see him in person. So, hey, I've been saying this for like all of the second half of last year, now the beginning of this year. The results are going to come. It's all about the process. He's still refining the mix, still trying to get the feel of it, still trying to get the location of it. But Ben Kasparius, trust me on this, he is as good right now from a stuff and just a pure arm talent perspective right now as he ever has been. And the results, trust me, the results are just right around the corner. They always are.
Yeah, and even with that, just looking at some of the numbers he's put up, one, the stuff, we've always known that Ben Kasparius has had an insane level of stuff on his pitches, and to hear that his stuff just is as best as it's ever been, that is great to hear. And some of the numbers actually reflect that. During his 16 and a third innings this year, 27 strikeouts.
Yeah,
that is insane. And he's getting a ton of swinging miss, a ton of strikeouts. That will play. If you are getting 27 strikeouts and 16 and a third innings, that is going to play for you. So keep working on it. Keep trusting the process, and the results will continue to follow for Ben Kasparius.
Hey, let's move on to one of our favorites. Oh, boy, look at that. Can you imagine that? Austin Gauthier hitting about an 18 hopper right up the middle. Mentioned in yesterday's show, hey, he got off to a slow start. When guys like this get off to a slow start, What do? Go back to what you've always been great at, right? That right there. How about that opposite field home run for Austin Gauthier? And all of a sudden now, Gator is on fire. Had three hits today. His third home run of 2024 that you just saw. Back-to-back three-hit games. Four multi-hit games in his last five, Austin, and that he's played in. And he is six for his last seven. Six for his last seven with two home runs, two doubles, and three RBIs. So it's not like you did see that 17 hopper up the middle, but it's not like that's been every hit he's had, that one there. He's also hit a couple of home runs and a couple of doubles. Gator is on fire. Nobody here is surprised.
No, nobody. Neither of us are surprised. And just throwing some more numbers on there just to give you a little bit of context. 293 average, 468 on base percentage, which, holy cow. And then a 534 slugging percentage, having that power introduced and having that be an element with the insane level of plate discipline and control that he has. He has seven more walks than he has strikeouts. He only has nine strikeouts in 58 at-bats. He's not striking out really at all. He's walking a ton. And what that does is that creates an insane level of floor to your ability, yes, a floor to your play. And right now, even with those numbers, with his OPS over 1,000, his batting average on balls in play is right around 300 at 298, which is right around league average, which means this is the type of player with the plate discipline that Austin Gauthier has that he should be, that there's no real indication for regression for a player like an Austin Gauthier. And that is the power of having an insane level of plate discipline with lots of walks, with not a lot of strikeouts. And that is why there is a high predictability with a player like an Austin Gauthier, who's versatile, who's played a lot of short, but can also play second. He can play some of the outfield, some of third base. There is a lot of projectability for him to be able to make it to the major leagues. It's about opportunity for him. And right now, Gator is absolutely on fire. Neither of us are surprised.
No doubt about that. Hey, got to see Jose Ramos again in person. Very, very impressive. I loved how he pulled his hands inside the ball right there. Shot that thing right back up the middle with two strikes. He has gotten a lot better at that. But make no mistake, 3-2-1, liftoff. That's what he does best right there. To the berm at one oak. And I can tell you when he hits those, Dennis Higgins, the play-by-play voice for Tulsa, is always so impressed because they're just majestic, high, just beautiful home runs that Jose Ramos hits. Big day for Double-A Tulsa today for Ramos. His team-leading fifth home run. He had two hits and three RBIs. Now Ramos has hits in four of his last five games, and he has three multi-hit games in the last five games he's played. So Jose Ramos still down in Double-A. I know that surprises a lot of people. That's okay. Hey, we've seen Michael Grove, Emmett Sheehan jump straight to the major leagues. He's a lot closer than you think. If the Dodgers think he's major league ready, it doesn't matter if he's in Double-A or Triple-A. They will call him up. Of course, they have a young man named Andy Páez up there right now. So Jose Ramos still working on that swing and miss, still trying to walk more, and still in Double-A, but had a big day.
Yeah, he had a big day, and that power is and seemingly always will be there for Jose Ramos. And I love that play that he had to get driving those two runs, to drive in Gator, to drive in T.Y. when he hit the ball up the middle. He can also do that and have that aspect to his game and not go for the home run every single time. But also, Jose Ramos can hit a home run seemingly every single time, and that power is so incredibly valuable and will be there. And the tools are very reminiscent of a guy like in Andy Páez, who is absolutely performing for the Dodgers to this point in his career. There is a lot of hope and a lot of belief in Jose Ramos. Continue to work on the process. Continue to try to find ways to eliminate some of the swing and miss in your approach. And that's going to create just a little bit more of that floor and a little bit more confidence for the Dodgers to be able to call him up to Oklahoma City and then to Los Angeles as well.
So what you're saying is he has a high ceiling, but his floor is not high enough yet. That's exactly what you're saying as far as needing to walk more, strikeout less. Hey, this is Jainer Fernandez. I know you got to see him a lot last year. Austin Gauthier, Austin, and you're very high on him. Okay, I talk about all the time. that jump from high A to double A, man, that's the one, because all of a sudden you're facing major league talent. Now, you're not facing major league execution at the double A level, but make no mistake about it, you are facing guys that have the talent to be in the major leagues. If you don't have the talent to be in the major leagues, you don't make it to double A. Now, like I said, you don't necessarily have the execution yet. Those guys are in triple A for the most part, but you do have the talent. So Yainer Fernandez off to a slow start. I think there's a lot of people that are curious. Hey, he's really come on the last couple of years. He's entered into some of the top prospects list. How is Yainer Fernandez going to transition to double A? So it was good to see him have a good day today. It's good to see him have hits in four games in a row, and got to see him in Wichita. He's a really slick fielding second baseman. I know he's caught a lot, but very versatile as well.
Oh, yeah. No, he is incredibly versatile, who has caught a lot throughout his career, now playing a lot of second base, which that versatility is incredibly valuable because you have a lot of different guys that can play catcher for this Tulsa team. And it has been a slow start for Yainer to start the season, but to see him, especially with the day that he had today, start to find his swing a little bit, go to that right center field gap with a little bit of power, get some of those base hits, be just a fun, electric type of player to this Tulsa Drillers lineup. I think a lot of Drillers fans and a lot of Dodgers fans are going to be really excited with the type of player that Yainer Fernandez is, because he is, when he is on, extremely talented, doesn't swing and miss a whole lot too. So if you want a little bit more of that floor type of players, Yainer Fernandez is one of those type of players.
Man, that team has, and you're seeing Ronan Kopp here, that team has Yainer Fernandez, that team has Austin Gauthier and Taylor Young, all three in the, and Griffin Lockwood, pal, and then Dalton Rushing, like the five most cerebral baseball players of all time. For me, a guy who's been in the coaching industry my whole life, I mean, I just sit there, it's like a dream, man. It's like the funnest team. And you got to see it, for the most part, all last year. So that is super fun. Hey, welcome back, Ronan Kopp. This was his first performance of 2024. He's been back at the complex. Have not communicated with Ronan whatsoever in these situations where you don't really know what's going on. Last thing I want to do is bother somebody and make them have to answer a question that they really would probably feel uncomfortable with. I don't know, maybe he wouldn't. I have absolutely no idea what the deal was with Ronan Kopp. I really don't care. It's not a bother to me. And so I'm really not even interested in it. All I'm interested in is the fact that he was back today and that fastball was already hitting 96 miles an hour. So Ronan Kopp made a splash in double A today. First of all, congratulations to Ronan to his promotion to double A, right?
Yeah, absolutely. He 100% deserves to be in Tulsa, and it is so good to see Ronan Kopp back on the mound. It felt like there definitely was a missing presence within the Dodgers minor league organization, and Ronan Kopp kind of feels that big, tall, left-handed, dominant, throws heat. And now that he has transitioned out of the bullpen, there is so much to be excited for if you're a Dodgers fan about the future of having Ronan Kopp be part of this Dodgers bullpen in the future. His stuff is nasty, absolutely electric, not just the velocity, but the other pitches that he's able to generate so much swing and miss with. Ronan Kopp, it's going to be so fun to be able to watch him develop at the double-A Tulsa level. It has started today. He is now part of this Tulsa team. Got a strikeout, pitch a scoreless inning. There's going to be a lot more of those coming up in the future for Ronan Kopp.
He's one of your favorites, isn't he?
Oh, yeah. No, and got to interact with him a little bit. Mostly his family is super awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Tom, his dad's a great dude. Okay, hey, this is Walker Buehler. He threw again tonight in Albuquerque, which, by the way, there was 30 runs scored last night. And Bill Kreismott, who's a totally professional pitcher, gave up like three or four runs in like a third of an inning, something like that. It's basically beer league softball is what happens whenever you get to Albuquerque. And if you want to know why the Dodgers AAA team is not in Albuquerque any longer, all you need to do is watch an Oklahoma City Baseball Club Albuquerque game in Albuquerque. Watch about 30 minutes of it, and you'll realize why they're no longer in Albuquerque, because every ball that's hit like goes to the moon, right? I mean, there's like 150 runs scored in every single game. It's exhausting to watch. Honestly, I hate even covering it. I hate the series in Albuquerque because it's like, oh, well, so-and-so's 4 for 5 or so-and-so's 7 for 8. And I'm like, I don't even know if this is even relevant because everybody's 7 for 8 in Albuquerque, yeah. Right? So it just kind of gets to like, okay, yeah, well, whatever. So to say that Walker Buehler tonight, boy, you're talking about throwing him into the fire. I mean, put him in Albuquerque, New Mexico, in that environment tonight. 4 innings pitched, 7 hits, 2 earned runs, 2 walks, and 5 Ks. I would personally have to say, and I hope this doesn't sound negative, I still think he's another rehab start or two away from going back to L.A. That doesn't mean I'm right. And a lot of times the Dodgers will promote a guy even if he's not throwing exactly the way they want, because a lot of times they think the environment will actually get him over the hump. So in other words, they think getting Walker Buehler around that excitement of being in the major leagues again and getting around the Freddie Freemans and the Mookie Betts and that type of elite clubhouse, that might actually make Walker Buehler better, faster than actually pitching on a Triple-A mound with basically no environment in front of you. So they may look at it from that perspective, but I think from a strictly overall just pitching perspective, I think he's still a outing or two away from an execution perspective. Here's an example. He hit 95.9, which is good. 96, hey, he was 92, 93. A lot of people were wondering if he was ever going to get back to 96. Well, yes, there you go. But the four seam tonight was only in the zone 46%. And I know a lot of people were not happy with James Paxton last night with all of his walks. Well, just an example, James Paxton landed his four-seam 61% of the time. So Walker Buehler was 15% less than that with his fastball. So if he's not landing his fastball, that four-seam fastball, I just don't see how he's going to get major league outs at a consistent level. But his cutter was a good pitch. He actually threw his cutter in the strike zone pretty well. And the curveball was a good pitch as well. He landed that pretty good. And also, not only did he land his curveball, he threw it for a good swing and miss. But I still think he's an outing or two away from refining the command with that four-seam fastball. If not, I think he's still on the control level. Control meaning just throwing strikes, and then command meaning, hey, throwing good, you know, hitting your spots within the strike zone. I still think he's on the control level, which to me tells, hey, it's a marathon, man. We need Walker Buehler for the playoffs, not in April, right? So Another outing in AAA is not going to hurt the Dodgers team, and I think it would benefit him. So that's just my opinion. I hope that doesn't sound negative.
And especially with the way that Landon Knack pitched tonight, giving the Dodgers 6 innings of baseball, the Dodgers do have a little bit of wiggle room with Walker Buehler. I know the depth of the Dodgers pitching has been tested, but you want the best Walker Buehler that you can possibly get. And I know a lot of Dodgers fans are eager because of the lack of depth, seemingly, with this Dodgers pitching staff. Time will come, and the Dodgers will make what they believe is the best decision for the Dodgers and for Walker Buehler. So it'll be interesting to see what the Dodgers do. Still a lot of work. Don't read too much into it as far as the ballpark and Albuquerque, which is why some of those park-adjusted statistics are relevant and important. I think Walker Buehler is going to be just fine.
I do, too. Hey, final thoughts. This has been a really fun show. Fun to get back on with you. Talk about these awesome prospects that we enjoy watching play so much. Final thoughts, Austin.
Yeah, there's a lot of exciting action. There's so many guys that are performing incredibly well. Some of the teams are performing really well. The Great Lakes Loons got doubleheader sweep against the Tin Caps. You saw Rancho get a win. You saw the big comeback with Oklahoma City on Tuesday. You got to see Tulsa get the win. All of these exciting action come because of the players and what they were able to do. And there's a ton of great players within this organization that we didn't even get to cover to. Yeah. We didn't even get a chance to talk about how good of an outing Jackson Ferris had, which he looked as good as he as I've seen Jackson Ferris.
Go ahead and
Ferris
talk about that. We should have. That was my fault. Go ahead and cover that, Austin.
Yeah. So Jackson Ferris pitched in game two. So it was Jermaine Rosario started game one, and then Jackson Ferris that started game two, and his stuff was really dominant, really effective. That breaking ball that just drops off the table was inducing a ton of swing and misses. The Tin Caps didn't know what to do because he was able to locate and command his fastball. And what was really impressive tonight in Fort Wayne, it was 45 maybe degrees out there, which is extremely cold for a lot of these guys, and especially because Jackson Ferris pitched in a very similar type of outing against Lansing, where it was extremely cold, extremely windy. Nobody really wanted to be playing out there, and his command wasn't really there in Lansing. We got to see the command be there for Jackson Ferris, and his stuff was, and his pitchability was as good as it has been in Great Lakes to this point. He was locating, he was inducing swings and misses, and this is the hope, this is the future. If you want to look to what Jackson Ferris can be, look to this outing against Fort Wayne tonight on Wednesday, April 24th.
All right, Austin. Hey, I want to thank you for joining. This has been a whole lot of fun. I want to thank everybody else for tuning in. And until next time, go Dodgers!